Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that LeelaQ's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. LeelaQ has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use LeelaQ for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat cold tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
Today's cool fact of the day is that your brain is only about 2% of the weight of your body, even though your brain is one of the most mitochondrially dense parts of the body. So it doesn't weigh very much, but it sucks power. Essentially, your brain, your heart, and your eyes are the things that use the most energy. So they're the ones that have the most effect from how you eat, from how you live, and basically everything you do. That's all driven by the density of mitochondria in the brain. So 2% of your body weight, but a lot more as a percentage of your mitochondria.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of 6 different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit ARRCLED.com.
Today's guest is a friend and someone I've had a chance to hang out with several times. Someone with a pretty unusual brain who has spent time working with high-performance adults, but also kids with autism on movement. This is a type of movement therapy and just a type of systems thinking of the human body that evolved from the Feldenkrais method, if that's something that you're familiar with, but something that has kind of gone beyond that to look at the programming of how the brain controls movement. So it's tied to functional movement, it's tied to neurological performance, and it's tied to the very core of who you are. And her name is Anat Banyal. Anat wrote a couple different books, and one of them, in fact, why don't you tell us the titles of your two books?
Absolutely. So my first book is called Move Into Life, The 9 Essentials for Lifelong Vitality. And it's geared for adults to take advantage of their brain's ability to upgrade itself. And I love it that you use you're the first person I talked to that said upgrading the brain. And that's the whole point. And the other book is Kids Beyond Limits. And it's my story about how I got to work with children with special needs and how that work helped me actually define the 9 essentials and things that parents, therapists can do that are very simple, counterintuitive very often, that really wake up the children's brains and give results that are way outside of what's expected today to be possible.
Now, your story is really interesting. When we first met, I'd come across your work before because I've spoken at Autism One. I've done some work around supporting the autism community. And lots of autistic parents use bulletproof supplements just because they like the purity level, because when you have sensitive brains, purity is really, really important. So I'm dialed in on that, my own experience with Asperger's. But that's not where I spend my primary focus. But so I'm familiar with your work. And then we met at the Transformational Leadership Council, which is a group that was started by Jack Canfield, who puts together a group of people who basically write around personal development. It was neat because we got to meet. I'm like, oh, I know your work. This is so cool. And then a week later, I'm in LA with one of 12 living grandmasters of a Chinese energy medicine tradition who does some, we'll just call it, energy work for me. And the guy sounds a little crazy, except he's a UCLA surgeon from Tennessee who just happened to spend 20 years in China training with the masters. Mm-hmm. Just a kind of an evolved guy who can mm-hmm. do things that he has no business doing. His name is mm-hmm. Barry Morguelan. He's the guy who wrote the meditation for mitochondria that's in Headstrong. And I go into his office and he's doing some cupping therapy, and this guy treats like presidents of countries, and he supports Tony Robbins during his things. Like one of the top level guys who just can do something. I can't explain what all it does. But sitting on his desk is a copy of your book. So it was just too serendipitous to go, wow, look at this. Yes. So people at the very height of their game, like Barry Morguelan, are also reading your book. But what I want to know, and we've had a chance to spend mm-hmm. time here at Bulletproof Lab, so I know this, but I want the audience to know. You notice things about what the brain does in response to the environment around it that most people are completely unaware of. And then you take that into kids with developmental problems, or adults with movement problems.
Or high performers, musicians, athletes, dancers,
How did you get the ability to do that? Because it's not normal. I know a few others like that who can just, it's like Neo in the Matrix. Yes. He sees zeros and ones, and everyone else just sees what, a red dress or something. Yeah. You look at someone, a child or an adult or a singer, and you see things that other people don't see, but how did you get that skill?
Fabulous question. Really fabulous. What happened was, since I was a child, I was what people would call very sensitive, or some people called me a difficult child.
Were you on the autism spectrum yourself? Or?
I don't think so in my mm-hmm. world, but I think today I might have been diagnosed that way. I intentionally put myself in daydream world because I could not handle people, most people around me, and I could not handle a lot of the environmental stuff. Lucky for me, I grew up in Israel where it was earlier on, and so a lot of things were natural because mm-hmm. there wasn't the money or the, so right. that it was a good thing. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that then, I learned to cope, and I became a very good student in high school because I realized that'll make me popular, things like that. But it always felt off. And it's when I met Feldenkrais. Oh, I did the Feldenkrais work as a child. My dance teacher taught his movement lessons, and I would do it once a week because one class was the regular 1-2-3, 1-2-3, mm-hmm. and the other one was what we called the lesson on the floor. The other girls didn't like it. I mm-hmm. took to it like fish to water. And when I would do that, our movement lesson, for 2 days, I was able to do things in gym class. I was well. So week after week, I moved from feeling not really lost and never could find home. And then 2 days I was well. And then fast forward, I'm in grad school for clinical psychology, and I'm going like, intellectually, I could kill what they were teaching us easily. But the desire to understand how I work, how people work, never left me. Finally, I remembered Feldenkrais. I started studying with him. And that's to answer your question. The way of using movement and what I learned from him, and then what I developed, the 9 essentials, was the way that I could start making sense of my world. And I saw that he saw things I couldn't see. So I did something that I think no one else that I know. Everybody wanted to learn what he did. I wanted to know what he sees. And I wanted to know what he thinks. because I knew he knew things like you described about me. And through the work, I could start noticing more, seeing more, feeling more. And by doing that, I realized I can learn anything. And all I have to do is just keeping that process that we will talk more about. And that's how I got to really seeing more. But I know that it's a learned. It's not like, oh, I have, you know, people say I have Jesus hands or, you know, things like that. I said, no, I worked to get there.
Got it.
When I worked in Tanglewood, and I worked with Seiji Osawa, right? Mm-hmm. He's the conductor. He was the artistic director. And I watched him work, getting the orchestra ready for a concert.
This is in Austria?
No. That was in the Tanglewood Music Festival. Where? Boston Symphony. Boston Symphony. And I knew that he hears what I don't hear. And I hear well. But I could see. So what happens to me now is when I meet a person like you or other people, I can identify whether I hear, see, feel, know, understand something or don't. And when it interests me, I start doing the process to get closer and closer to what the other person can do or see.
Interesting. I've met a few people who, when they're at the top of their game, in fact, I was once on stage before the floor opened with some of the guys from Third Eye Blind, Stephen Jenkins, Stephen Jenkins, the lead singer, and I got to be friends. And so I'm like, I'm going to get a picture of me like on the drum set, right? So one of the guitars like picked up to start riffing. I'm like, oh crap, I have no skills musically whatsoever. So I'm like, but you look at like a professional musician like that, and like they can jam, like they do something. And we've looked at musicians' brains, and they literally have skills they don't have. And my wife, Dr. Lana, she spent 5 years running a drug and alcohol addiction emergency medicine center. And we can walk into a room, and she's like, alcoholic, stimulant abuser.
Yes.
Even if they haven't had a drink in 3 days, she can smell it. She can sense it. And these are visceral senses that she and every other doctor who works with addicts has been able to develop over time. And what's interesting is that you and maybe Kelly Starrett, who does the San Francisco CrossFit, who's been on the mm-hmm. show, he does a lot of functional movement stuff as well. And you walk in, and like when I walk in, you're like, Dave, you got something going on in your chest that isn't quite right, and you know, one shoulder isn't where it should be, and you see all this stuff. How does that translate, though, for the quarter million people who are going to hear this interview? They're like, all right, what's in this for me right now?
Yeah.
So there are these people who have these magic spider powers of perception, but like, how do I translate those nine principles into something that people can take away today?
Well, the first thing that I think is really important to take away is that, at least I would say, if not 100%, 90% of what we call intuition or talent is actually people who systematically trained themselves and their brains to notice and interpret information. So the idea that you're born knowing it, or we have tendencies, we have inclinations, we have whatever, genetic endowment, but to get to those high levels, and it's not just practice doing the same thing, it's a very active process of continued learning and continued refinement and wanting to know. Now, the thing that the nine principles or the nine essentials, and if you're interested, I can talk about it a little bit, is that I'll do it very brief, we talked about it just a few minutes ago, the brain is an information system. It's not a mechanical system. And one of the big mistakes in trying to get ourselves to be smarter or therapy or rehabilitation or fitness is that people treat the brain as if it was a mechanical system. So they think if I work harder or I do more repetitions or I get all the way to pain and strain, I'll get more outcome. Well, if you want to move a heavy chair, maybe that's true. But if you want to get your brain to be smarter and get you working better, you actually, that's the opposite. The forcing, so the brain, I spoke to, now he's a friend and we're doing some projects together, Dr. Michael Merzenich. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people talk about stimulation and they equate it with information. And from my experience working with people, stimulation alone is not information for the system. The brain either turns stimulation into information or it doesn't. And it does it through perception of differences. So when I see the difference between red and blue, I see color and I see red and blue. And I feel a difference between moving my arm this direction or that direction, which gives me the you know, on the violin, the just the right tone, and I'm more like Yasha Heifetz. I have to hear the difference. I have to see, I have to hear, I have to kinesthetically feel differences, smell, etc. So the nine essentials are a way to get your brain to be really, really quickly much better at perceiving differences. And once you perceive differences, spontaneously the brain reorganizes things into higher quality organization or breakthroughs to do things you couldn't do before.
It's interesting.
And I'd be happy to name a few.
We'll walk people through that. Which I think it means that they'll get something meaningful they can take away.
Absolutely.
When I got going in Silicon Valley, I basically figured that most of the inputs that I had were noise, right? So, like, it's you know, too many people talking about all sorts of crap I don't care about.
Yeah.
So I worked on, because I was basically on the spectrum meaning like autism, in that I had many of the symptoms of Asperger's, probably had it, wasn't formally diagnosed, certainly ADHD and stuff like that, before I like turned my brain all the way on. But so you sort of narrow down what you pay attention to and just do your best to block out everything else. And the core belief system there is that like there it's all noise and you don't realize there's a signal in there. And my work in tech was we have an overwhelming amount of systems management data. So I can measure tens of thousands of variables per second from any operating system, any app, any server, any network. It's not possible to take all of that stuff and put it into a system. Mm-hmm. So what it came down to was, how do you get a signal out of all the noise? So you can do that from a technology perspective, and we call that event correlation. And some of the early work that I did was on broad-scale event correlation systems. Well, it turns out our brains, just like you're saying, they're very powerful event correlation systems. And they'll figure out, oh, when this happens, that means this, as long as you understand that there's information there. And as long as you maybe do some things to reduce the amount of noise or to make it so you can spot these.
To reduce the noise and to increase the literal capacity, physiological capacity of the system to perceive, to notice that there is a difference.
So what's an example of this?
Like, okay, so I'll tell you when I thought it the first time.
Yeah.
No, I'll tell you, it's one of the very first children I worked with when I moved to New York from Israel. And he was 3 years old, beautiful, beautiful boy, very severe spastic cerebral palsy. And he could do nothing. I mean, he had no idea how to organize movement in space, and he couldn't speak. And I started working with him. His response, it's really funny. It's like Feldenkrais wrote about my work towards the end of his life. He wrote a letter so I can get into the United States. And he wrote that the outcomes have to be seen to be believed. You know that because of your work, the brain is the fastest to change and the fastest to upgrade itself. So it's instantaneous, practically, when it works.
And let me interrupt you for a second. For listeners, if you are not familiar with Feldenkrais, very, very famous movement, like pioneer in the field of movement.
And that's a pretty
big endorsement. Just for
And of course, and it's the he's really the pioneer of the neuroplasticity and the lack of separation of mind and body, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and he was a physicist. He was a quantum mechanics physicist, even a nuclear physicist or quantum physicist. Anyway, so you know, the parents tell me, and then they say he gets speech therapy. And one of the things they do with him in speech therapy, and by the way, speech therapists are wonderful and committed, and it's not against a therapist, but it's really what we know and what we learn. So it's an opportunity to upgrade, right? So they say they take his tongue and they brush it. They brush the tongue to stimulate it so he would start talking.
His tongue.
Now, do you know how the homunculus, right, in the brain, the way we really look, like a huge tongue?
Explain this, yeah.
Okay, throughout our early years, and throughout life, actually, we literally map the body to the brain. That means that the baby is born, they don't really know they have a hand, but it moves, it has like random movements, and gradually through experiences, things happen. The brain makes connections and maps it, and there's what's called the motor cortex, which means It's the movement-related mapping in the cortex. And there is the sensory cortex, which is the sensations are mapped. And actually, a third of the motor cortex is sensory, so the brain can really correlate the two things together. But most people don't realize that. Now, the parts that don't move, like a child, for instance, that's born with a brachial plexus injury, where there isn't enough connectivity, there's injury to the nerve that innervates the arm, then even though the arm is there and the muscles are intact, it doesn't have mapping of that arm in the brain. So from the point of view of the brain, it doesn't have that arm. Now, if somebody has an arm, let's say a soldier, and there's an amputation in the war, even though the arm is gone, the brain doesn't know it's gone. So that's why there's the pain, and it tries to interpret the sensations that are coming in, and it sort of goes wild because it doesn't have anything to do with what it knew before and with reality. These things can be worked with, by the way, and help very, very quickly. But so in the sizes of the representation of our body in what's called the homunculus is proportional to the innervation. It's not proportional to the actual physical side. So it's basically a functional representation or image of the body. So then the tongue is bigger in the brain. The tongue will be bigger than the pelvis and the legs and the feet put together. So we look really funny. We have tiny little sticks and feet and a tiny pelvis, a little bit maybe not too big a torso. And then we have huge lips and a huge tongue that goes almost all the way to the floor. And the hands and the thumb are enormous. So this is what we look like. So from example...
You're saying what we look like from our own perspective when we're a baby?
Oh, no, from the development.
Okay.
So a baby's brain, actually, most of it is not mapped yet. So you get a lot of
Swiss cheese.
You're
talking about an adult's brain.
An adult, okay. The way you actually look, and if you go, you can maybe plug in an image, mm-hmm. or I can email you an image I use in my presentations, where I asked, in TLC, I just did the 15-minute mm-hmm. thing, one morning,
right.
the last meeting. You weren't there. And I put that image, and I said to the audience, do you know, because that, where do you look like that? And they didn't know. So that where do we need to do some more stuff so we intensify the innovation to have access to what we want to do? So when you take the tongue of a child and you stimulate it with a brush, and the brain doesn't know what to do with this intensity of stimulation, and they're spastic cerebral palsy. That means that when they move, everything contracts at the same time.
Wow.
What you really do is rather than create more differentiation so you can control the tongue and start having speech, you make the whole brain activate more all at the same time. And the brain associates, what you mentioned a minute ago, associates any sensation in the tongue to intensify its spasticity. So you drive the brain in the opposite direction. And I thought, wait a minute, stimulation is not information. That's when I got it.
So I said, information.
What I want to do is to reduce, because they said that he needs to get more stimulation. I said, he gets in as much stimulation as anybody else. We all roughly get the same amount of stimulation, both from the inside and the outside.
Mm-hmm.
It's what our brains does with that stimulation that makes the difference. And that's when I realized I have to reduce the intensity and refine this child's ability to feel. And he started in pretty short order to start talking.
Like how short of an order are we talking about?
Well, let's talk about nowadays because I don't know, let's just say 1 week or 2 weeks. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. You know, and it wasn't full language.
But it was less than a month.
Oh, yeah. And I work with a child. We work for a week intensely, and then we give them a break for 2-3 weeks because the brain has so much to work with and integrate, and then we do some more, and we do the same thing with adults. But nowadays, with children on the autism spectrum, sometimes within a session, I have videos, now I videotape everything,
mm-hmm.
we within a session, the child will all of a sudden start saying words that couldn't do it before.
Wow.
Because once the brain can do it, it just goes for it. It just runs. Because a child heard language. But imagine if... Let me give this very mm-hmm. briefly, this image. I tried to understand what it feels like for a child that appears with the symptoms of autism, right? What is it like to be the child, right? And the image that came to me in my mind was a very large blender.
Yeah, it's very overwhelming.
And you throw into the blender, a lot of yogurt, you fill it in, and you put in, all kinds of fruits and nuts and things like that. So you get this purplish, pinkish, whitish thing with bits and pieces moving, and then you put a mask and a long snorkel, and you put yourself inside the yogurt thing, and then you try to make sense of what comes in through that yogurt, right? But you keep experiencing this thick thing within. Every so often, if maybe a little bit you can clear through the glass, all of a sudden your brain can, but otherwise it's just this soup. And you can never just, because the job of the brain is to put order in the disorder and make sense out of the nonsense. So it just opens it a little bit and then it goes back. And I gave that image one time at Autism One. I think it was Autism One. And Jill Bolte Taylor, she's a friend and a supporter. So she came to listen to me give the talk. And I said that she jumped on the stage and she said when she had the brain bleed, she's a Stroke of Insight author and TED Talk. And she said that was her experience. She was autistic. She was in the blender.
Aren't all adults in that to a certain extent? There's a certain amount of fog that's always been present. So until something lifts it for you, you don't know it's there because it's the omnipresent thing.
Yes. It's a continuing your previous question. That blender, really by doing the process of getting the brain to be a better brain in its own right, that does the perception of differences better. And so it generates more information. It gets better in spontaneously integrating because we can't. The outcome is always spontaneous. I learned that I cannot control the outcome. Every time I try to make an outcome happen, I dive myself and my client down to the ground. But what I do is I give the brain the capacity to generate relevant information and do with it what it's going to do with it. And it always does a good thing with it. And so that's how people, your audience, can start getting a better brain. That's it. From the way we do it. You do it in amazing ways yourself.
But it seems like there's sort of two sides to the coin. There is brain hardware that's there. And a lot of the work I've done in the last couple of years is just around basic brain energetics, where the brain wants to make sense of information. But in order to do that, it has to have enough energy to do that. And I found that in my own brain, when I was working really hard, it was because I wasn't making enough energy. So when you have enough energy, the work doesn't feel hard. And to drive neuroplasticity, the brain naturally is neuroplastic. It naturally wants to optimize. And in order to guide it in certain ways, sometimes you push the brain to the point of discomfort. Not looking at like weightlifting at all, a good example might be dual and back training. You can double the amount of working memory that you have. But even when I presented this to hedge fund managers, guys with billions of dollars and all, saying, look, 20 days, 20 minutes a day of training, you can probably get 10 IQ points that way. Most of them won't do it because as soon as you start doing it, it's just frustrating. You just feel like you're just falling down all the time. Kind of, when a child's learning to walk, they just fall over and over until they finally get it.
How do you mean falling down? Because I haven't experienced it, so I don't know quite what you're talking about.
Well, so with this type of training, you're doing a really frustrating activity where you hear one thing and see another thing, so you have to at the same time be able to hear and see. It's not a natural thing for most people. And what happens after about 20 days of this just repeated failure, actually usually it's 14 days of failure, all of a sudden your score goes up and you realize, wait, I can see, remember, and hear and remember at the same time because of neuroplasticity. But to drive the brain to grow those neurons, it's energetically expensive to grow neurons. You need new mitochondria, you need new fat, you have to actually grow stuff. So what we end up doing is the brain will resist, right? And now this is a special skill we're trying to put in. And I've found that there's natural optimization that we'll do. The natural optimization is easier when there's enough energy. And the unnatural optimization, which is a lot of what I focus on now, like the how do you make a super brain, it comes down to get enough energy in so the brain can sort through the yogurt and you can do this. What I want to know for my own use and for people listening is, even if we didn't upgrade our brain energetics and we just wanted to, whatever amount of yogurt is in our world around us, what are the, like the maybe two or three simplest things you can do to make it easier or faster for your brain to sort through this, to get more signal from the world around
absolutely.
You.
So first of all, let me 100% validate from my experience what you said in terms of, that's what I told you, we did the lecture, you know, on autism, bottom up and top down, right? So you do a whole lot of the bottom up. When I work with people, the easiest to see it is with the babies. Within 10 minutes sometimes, especially the kids on the spectrum, they get black under their eyes, they start looking ashen, and I know that their brain is starving.
I know that feeling
know
so well.
Their brain is starving. So, and then now, you know, I'm getting more resources here to where to send parents. I said, you need to go to someone. I don't know how to do it. I'm not an expert, but I know that this system needs the nutrition and literally the building blocks in order for our work to be. There was one child that we actually said, I won't work unless they do the work. I said, because it's cruel and I don't think it's effective.
Yeah.
It was very extreme. So yes, to that. Now, absolutely, two things. You know how children on the autism spectrum have very often issues with selectivity in what they will eat, very narrow diet, and digestive problems.
Yeah, I certainly had those.
Yeah. When we work with them and we upgrade the ability of the brain to put order in the disorder, make sense out of the nonsense, what happens is their digestion gets better without changing anything, and they start eating more foods. That was my top-down conversation, and that was when Mike Merzenich was there, and he started explaining how that. So you can actually, when you get the brain to do its job better, and I'll answer in a second how, a couple of ways to do that, actually the autonomic nervous system level of functioning improves to a point. It still needs the building block. Otherwise, you know, you put a cap on it. So a few ways that, you know, the listener or viewers can do. The first one, if you were just to do one, is what I call the first essential, is movement with attention. First of all, we are a moving machine. There's movement all the time in us, a voluntary, involuntary, internal, external, whatever. And the brain is very busy with that. What I discovered through work is that when either you move yourself, you do a movement exercise, or someone else, like a practitioner, moves you, if you pay attention to what you feel as you move. So you have to know, I'm going to move my arm up and down, like, let's say, this direction. So you know enough what you do. But if you go like, what does it feel? And you start gauging the feeling, you pay attention to what you feel. Yeah. When you do not pay attention, research shows that there is no detectable change in the mapping in the brain, the density of the maps in the brain related to the area that you're moving.
So you have to focus or you don't get better.
Exactly. There's zero learning. You only groove in the existing. So it's the grooving in the myelination, the deeper and deeper habits, which become really harder and harder to get out of. But the moment you pay attention, the estimated in children, but from my experience, adults are about the same, 1.8 million new connections per second. So it's about 100 million a minute. And if you do it different things in 10 minutes, about 1 billion new connections. That starts being like the order of magnitude the brain likes, right?
Is that why yoga can be so effective? Because a lot of yoga is about, you pay attention to every little thing.
Exactly. Tai Chi, all those, the way martial arts used to be done before it became like whoo kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's the attention to what you feel as you move is the opportunity for growth, but in a massive speed, from which the brain pulls. It doesn't use all the connections ever, but it gives it the freedom to integrate it into the intended outcome. So the movement with attention. Now, you don't have to, you can do anything. If you go to the gym, you might look weird, but you put like the treadmill, slow speed, just for 1 or 2 minutes. And you walk and you feel the contact with the heel, feel as you, one foot after the other, feel where and feel the differences between one foot and the other. Yeah. Feel what happens in your spine. Are your hip? And then you just put it on regular speed and you do it longer, better, faster. And if you had some pain, usually the pain will disappear. Like that. It's instantaneous. It's remarkable. You make coffee, coffee. You make your bullet coffee, right? Mm-hmm. And you pay attention to, I'm lifting here. Do I feel, where, how far do I feel the movement? Do I shift weight when I do it? It doesn't matter what you pay attention to. As long as you pay attention to what you feel, being.
Okay.
But I wouldn't just call it mindfulness because then it becomes vague.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of I'm a big fan of mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Much more, what do I feel? In workshops that I teach people, I go back in the morning, the next morning, I said, okay, what are some of the essentials you're going to be using? And people say, movement with attention. I say, attention to what? To what movement you do. It takes people 3 days to really get, I'm going to pay attention to what I feel. It's amazing how hard it is for people to get that.
It's funny. It makes me think about the 40 Years of Zen, the neurofeedback program. Mm-hmm. We're bringing these executives through, and they're working to reach advanced states of performance in meditation. And instead of thinking about it, which is what most people are doing about the movement, they're thinking and analyzing. The trick in order to raise their score on the neurofeedback, it's actually to feel it. So it's the visceral felt sense in the body. Which for me was a huge thing to understand that had any value as someone who was kind of on the spectrum, where like there's no point to all that crap. Like, just get it out of there. It's just getting in my way. So what I started doing was coaching people to stop thinking about it. Just notice, like, does it hurt?
Notice.
Is it warm?
Notice.
Is it tingly? Is it sparkly?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Perfect.
Right?
Perfect. Anything, because the ability to notice is a learned function. And anything that's learned can get better and better. So you ask me, how do I get to see things that others don't? Because I never stop, training my own skill of noticing. And that's the skill you train by doing the essentials and movement with attention. By the way, no feeling, no thinking. You had enough sensation and feeling, as Jill says, we're feeling beings that think. We're not thinking beings that feel.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, so, and feeling in, especially your kind of audience that is already interested in personal growth and performance and will spend the time to do this and spend the time to and money to get some products or do exercises and so on, tend to be people that are put a lot of value in thinking, which I put a lot of value in thinking myself. I mean, hello.
Yeah.
However, there's a tendency for the feeling part, the sensation part, to become invisible. And what I'm inviting people to do is bring that way forward to the foreground to give the brain what it needs in order to do its job. And that is to feel and through feeling to perceive differences. So that's one essential. Movement with attention to what you feel. Notice what you feel.
One of the practices that helped,
as you move, yeah,
that helped me a lot as I was just getting going on hacking myself is I would use these engineering notebooks in Silicon Valley. And so you're sort of taking notes in meetings and all of that. But in the margin, anytime I noticed something new that usually was around cognitive function, brain fog, just ability to focus and just quality of energy, I would just write down.
Perfect.
And so the idea is first you notice, then you realize, you feel it in order to notice it. You don't think of it and then feel it.
Yeah.
And then just to take a note of it really grew my mindfulness a lot. So then I'm like, wait, okay, now I see a pattern. Now I can look at the events around me and see which of those are driving this pattern or not.
Which is, I mean, it couldn't be more perfect. So what you said is we know, then we learn. People think first you learn, then you know. The other way around. So first it's a feeling. It's there. It's in you. You can't decide to have it. You have it. And then you observe it, and then you define it. And then you start making correlations. When I do it like this, I get that. When I do it like this, I get that. And it can be totally nonverbal, or no newborn would have ever learned anything.
Totally true.
So that's the first one. And, of course, what I so love about what you just said is you said, when I notice something new, so that's one of my essentials, which is called variation. Variability is like saying life. It's like saying biology. I mean, variability is it, right? And So everybody knows now that if you want, you know, anti-aging and brain plasticity, you need to do different things. So for most people, it's good what they do, but it's in very big chunks. Mm-hmm. This year I'll go to Italy, next year I'll go to France.
Right.
You know, I will, you know, so you do different thing, you know, things, which is good, but you still take the same brain and you just give it a little challenge, right? All of a sudden you hear slightly different language and the hotel room is different unless you go to Hilton everywhere. And, you know, so you put a little bit of challenge on your nervous system to manage novelty and the unexpected. But we can bring variability intentionally in a dense period of time, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I do lessons up to 45 minutes, where you really intentionally bring variability. And without exception, you will find immediate improvement. So let's say you throw a ball and you throw it a certain way, or golf, people like golf, right? So you do golf. So the way to bring variability, which is very simple, sometimes you put the golf club on the side. Sometimes you do it with a golf club because sometimes you want to distance from the existing associations for a little bit because they're very dominating. So when I work with musicians, I have them play to me a little bit, then put the violin or cello, whatever, on the side. I do some variations with them. I get them back to the instrument, and then I take them away. So I do the same thing with golf, for example. So what I would do is I say, okay, now move. But move your whole body, you know, stand on your feet and everything like one unit. Now, when you do it next time, I slow them down. That's a huge essential, by the way. I'll talk about it next. I say, do the same movement. And I say, but turn your head in the opposite direction. You rarely will see a golfer ever spontaneously doing that, right?
Right.
So they turn your head in the opposite direction. I say, now, for one moment, turn your head left and look to the left. Turn your head right, look to the right. I mean, people doing it, they can even try just as I say. And then turn your head to the left, but turn your eyes to the right. Turn your head to the right. Take your eyes to the left at the same time. And now do it while you do the golf. That is already a much more complex requirement on the system. And I said to them, just that, 3 minutes, let's say. Now just hit the ball, you know, and it's a completely different thing. It's a completely different thing, and you can improve it. And then if you want to really improve it faster, put them lying on the back. So the whole requirement for balance, and which occupies, you know, 98% of the brain. So you calm that demand down, and you have them do the movement, first of all, without the club, and then you're also in a different relationship to gravity. You do the same, take the arms here, the head here, the eyes here, whatever, a few variations. You can also move the legs to the opposite direction. Then you say, pop on your feet, hit the ball. Huge change. You can do it when you make your coffee. If you always do it like this, you say to use the other arm. Use the same arm. Look down when you do it. Look up. Close the right eye, do it. Just look through one eye. Close the other eye, do it. Do it through the other eye. And then just do it. And all of a sudden, pain in the shoulder disappears. I mean, it's just like that.
Wow. So just introducing the variety.
But within. You see, so you don't have to go to Italy, France, and all. You can.
Mm-hmm.
But you do it within the action. Anything you do, my father, who's an inventor, had to solve a problem. It doesn't matter the thing he was working on. And I just wrote my first book, and I sent the first copy I sent to him. And he called me up, and he said, I was stuck on solving a certain problem. They were already in manufacturing, and they were getting a real big problem in the plant. And he said, I couldn't solve it. And then I decided, I'll try variations.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I put on the computer variations that I knew ahead of time were wrong. But I just decided to experiment with that. And he said, and in 10 minutes, I had the full solution.
Wow.
It's very, very powerful.
Now, sometimes that can be really tiring. Like you talked about paying attention to your feet when you walk as part of this on a treadmill. So I've, my whole life, had really tender feet. So for me to do anything that was like walking really like that, it was actually overwhelming. So I finally decided that I was going to change the signal to noise. And I have a sleep induction mat that I make. It's basically, it's an acupressure mat with a bunch of spikes on it. And normally you lay on it before bed to overwhelm the nervous system, so then it'll just melt and relax. And it's a kind of a cool bulletproof hack thing. And What I did instead is, though, is I taught myself to stand on this. First, I would sit, and so my feet are on these kind of sharp, spiky things. Eventually, I got to where I could stand on it, and then I could pay attention to my feet. I could walk outside without pain. Like, it totally transformed that. And now I wear the Vibram Five Fingers, especially when I travel, whenever it's not wet outside, I wear those, because the nerve density in the feet is really high. And so for me, that has actually profoundly affected pain throughout my body. I noticed that when I wear those things, I don't have any pain.
It's remarkable. Yeah, because, yeah. You know, there was a research thing done a bunch of years back. So we can't find the research itself. But I remember reading the paper where, you know, they did these things you put in the shoes, plastic that had those spikes, right? Mm-hmm. And they did it to, I don't know, stimulate the feet. But then they found that older people, their balance got better. Now, if you think of what's aging, if I can make it really simple, the opposite of aging is being born and growing and, you know, in the youth period, right? What does the system do, like, incredibly intensely is grow the brain, create new connections, create differentiation. Differentiation means that first the baby can only do that, flex and not flex. And eventually you can be a concert pianist. That's remarkable level of differentiation, right? And complexity. The system gets more and more complex and it has more freedom. Aging is losing complexity. Mm-hmm. Is going back, so older people start moving like this and so on. And the ability to perceive differences degrades. I read that a bunch of years. I said, they get better balance, not because they get, because of the stimulation. They feel the feet more. Mm-hmm. They feel the feet more. The brain can do something with the information, you know, with the stimulation that comes in. They just stop feeling it. You put children that have cerebral palsy in braces. Temporarily, for specific reasons, it's okay to do. There are times when it's useful. But the ones that put because you they can't control, so you turn the legs like a tree trunk. Mm-hmm. By the age 11, they don't feel the bottom of their feet. Wow. So what I say, because there's no variability. It feels always the same. So I said to parents, they say, should I put on the brace or not? I said, well, depending if you're wanting to give it time to see if the child will ever walk independently, or if we accept that the child is not going to get better, then you can put on them whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And of course, we are a complex system. What happens with the feet informs all the joints. So that's variations in any way you want to put them in.
So variations works. Are good. I have one more question there about cerebral palsy. I've done some work with Dwight Jennings, who's been a guest on the show. He's a craniofacial physician, actually in Alameda, in your neck of the woods in the Bay Area.
I know of him.
Oh, you know of him, okay.
And we refer to him.
Oh, you do refer to him, but of course you would. So for listeners, what Dr. Jennings does, and he does specific work for people with CP or any sort of chronic, weird neurological stuff, he looks at the alignment of the bite. Yeah. And the jaw. And my jaw is about a half inch forward from where it used to be. Not from surgery, just from allowing it to relax, because one of the big signals for the environment around you comes from the way your teeth connect. And mm-hmm. my bite was kind of far back and jacked up, which was triggering my sympathetic or my fight mm-hmm. or flight response all the time, just from jaw tension mm-hmm. that I was unaware of because it had mm-hmm. always been there. So today I have about a 3 millimeter cap on each of my back molars that changed the structure of my face, but more importantly, changed the structure of my nervous system and made me more more aware of my movement and more balanced, which is kind of amazing. Right?
We send to him a lot of the people we work with.
Okay.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Can you talk more about the sense of proprioception, which is our sense of where we are in space and how the jaw and the elbows and like what is proprioception and how does that affect things?
Well, without proprioception, you can't live. I mean, it's like we are all a system that needs to get somehow the sensations to inform the system what's going on.
But it's usually so, wrong though, right? Like
oh, I love it. I got it. I mean, it's like it's so broad. I didn't know where to go. But we learn to see, right? We learn to hear. We get, again, the stimulation and an impact, But it's, again, it's that soup. It's that blender thing. It's just noise. It's like, right? Mm-hmm. And if we get too much of it and we can't put order in it, it actually is very agitating to the system. It downgrades the whole system. The sensation and interpreting the sensations, first of all, feeling them, and then the interpretation of the sensations as they come in, is a very lengthy learning process. Extremely lengthy learning process. So when a child starts, I can send you a quick video, I won't go into it right now, but when a very young, like a 7-8 week old baby, starts reaching out looking to catch something, you'll see that it has great, you know, it jumps off the trajectory. Like if I want to touch your nose, mm-hmm. I can just go and touch your nose. That's extremely complex. I have to know that most people, partly because of the way the biological system, and I'd like to go back to the success mm-hmm. and failure about your CEOs. I might have some suggestion to awesome. Give you. So more of them want to do it. But most people, because of the nature of our biological system, is when we gauge something as success, and usually success is like, first of all, I survived, then I'm approved, mm-hmm. I've got the satisfaction of what I need. Unless the environment invites that, and your listeners are self-motivated to do that, that's we stop. So most people around the teenage years actually stop the massive development, because they move very much into social dynamics and they kind of get out of that very intense internal, personal, self-centered process of development.
You also lower neuroplasticity, like something called brain-derived neurotrophic factor drops after a certain age.
Yeah, but if you keep the process, you upgrade that.
A lot of his talk is about upgrading.
The brain is a negative entropy system. It puts order in the disorder. Everything, we are part of the world, and we will go to entropy. Entropy is always there. So how much are we going to invest in going to higher levels of organization? That's negative entropy, right? In very broad terms. And as you said, initially it's exhausting because let me just go back on that. So there's success. And then there's the environmental demands. There's very low value placed on continued personal development in all aspects, unless it serves something. So athletes are encouraged to continue. Mm-hmm. If you go to university, you're encouraged in certain ways to continue. But the personal growth is actually usually just dropped on the side. A very big part of the literal formation of the sense of self and evolving into a more full human being, and in my world, evolving into who you were born to be, is continuing the process of training the proprioceptive system, which is the basis for everything. And you see, without sight, you can live. Without hearing, you can live. We prefer to have it, but we can live. Without proprioception, no life.
So if you don't know where your body is in space,
you can't
feed yourself.
To develop it, you can actually get better and better and better at it. And that's the essentials do that. So one mm-hmm. or two more essentials?
Before we get to those, I have a screw in my right knee. I've had 3 surgeries on that knee, and they're entirely unnecessary. It's because I didn't have a good sense of proprioception when I was young. Partly, I lived in a basement of toxic mold, which jacks up your nervous system.
It's
so
awful.
You don't grow the sense of proprioception the way you should. And then as a guy who's lost 100 pounds of fat, I remember really clearly the first 5 years or so, when actually I have ribs. I can see my abs sometimes, depending on what I ate. But I'd walk down a hallway, I would move to the side to make space as if I was a 300-pound person, because my sense
Perfect.
Of proprioception
yes.
was still 300-pound body, even though
yes,
I wasn't
exactly.
anymore.
Which
just stood out to me one day. I'm like, wait, I didn't have to step to the side there, but I did. And it's like a constant tuning of the sense of what's actually happening, where am
exactly.
I right now?
And that's, by my understanding, aside from all the physiological stuff that really also plays a huge part, is why people who lose weight gain it back.
Because they still have the picture of that.
Because remember the homunculus? I mean, everything you've learned to do within who you were. You lost the weight. It's like being an amputee. Mm-hmm. It's like you amputated a whole, but all around, right? The brain doesn't know that. So I when I work with people who lost a lot of weight, I do things that they start experiencing their actual size rather than having the other size.
I mean, what kind of things? I'm sure a lot of people, have lost 50 plus pounds. So
yes.
What can they do?
Well, I mean, I'm going to plug my own materials here because I can't teach. So I have, you know, the Neuro Movement for Whole Brain Body Fitness program. They can get on my website, anatbaniel.com.
Let's spell that. anatbaniel.com?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, Anatbaniel Method.
And by the way, there's no like affiliate or any stuff. Anat's work is worth your attention. That's why she's on the show.
Yeah, thank you. And I have, if people have pain, I have a packet for pain relief. Healthy backs, healthy necks, healthy joints, scoliosis and healthy back. I mean, it's a whole thing. And each one of those lessons is different from the others. And also across the programs, because variability, mm-hmm. different movement lessons. And when you do it, as you do it, because you pay attention to what you move, there are variations I built in. I make sure that because we work on one function per lesson, mm-hmm. but we bring a lot of variations and we always make it sure it's a whole body integrated thing. And you actually experience yourself again and again within the new parameters. So you can shorten like the process. You can first of all go for it intentionally, rather than hope it's going to work. And the other part is, you know, within a week or two, you're done. I mean, but thoroughly, and you grew new connections, and you can do things you couldn't do before, and you upgrade the brain. So,
cool.
Yeah, so I am really now dying to work with you because of the screws and the chest and the whole thing. We'll do it.
I'd love to get an upgrade from you. That'll be fun.
Yeah, well, we'll exchange upgrades. And there's plenty I can upgrade in. And so another essential mm-hmm. is something, again, two of them that are quite they're very productive, but they're counterintuitive. One is slow. Mm-hmm. Slow is an incredibly important mechanism to wake up the brain. Mm-hmm. And the fast, if you know and you'll understand the structure of the brain, you can only do what you already know.
Mm-hmm. Fast, has to be wired in.
It's already wired in. And the brain, when you go fast, has to go to what it has there. So it always goes to what you already know. So if you want to go past what you do, you do what you do, you do the different essentials with it, which I recommend, you slow down. You speed, first of all, you make possible change. Otherwise, change is very unlikely. And then you potentiate the change tremendously. So anything, slow down the movement, slow down the intensity of how you do things and so on and so forth. The other one is reducing the force. That is, again, if you know the Weber-Fechner law, you know the doctors here in the room understand that, is the more intense the base stimulation is, the level of stimulation, the greater additional stimulation you need to perceive a difference. It's a logarithmic mm-hmm. curve. So it grows really fast. So if you want to change how you do something in your shoulder or in your leg, or if you want to move better, if you reduce the effort, you slow down, you do the movement smaller in the beginning, and you pay attention to what you feel, it's miracle after miracle, breakthrough after breakthrough. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, damn, it works. So, you know, over and over again, it really works. I still get surprised by it.
That's awesome. So the first one was people can focus on the sensation of something, how something feels.
How they feel as they move.
And the second one is to move more slowly.
Real slow down.
Okay.
And you learn how to do it because to actually control movement really slow is harder. And so the second is slow.
Mm-hmm. And what's the third one?
The third was a reduction of force.
Okay.
I call it subtlety. You just do it with less force. And the fourth one is variations. If you don't follow my work, I provide the variations. Mm-hmm. But you can just bring in any variations if you can get creative, any variation you want. And the fifth one that is two more that I want to say really quick is flexible goals. A huge mistake is to try to get to the goal up front, because if you could, you would do it already. So we never know how we get there.
Move in the direction continuously, but don't have to hit a certain level right away.
Or even the actual outcome. I know that when I work with a human being and a human brain, and they're alive, and they're there, and they're interested, they have the potential. Their brain is remarkable. It might take 5 minutes. It might take 10 years. Depends what we are after and depends where they're at. Most of the things usually take between an hour to 6-7 months. Depends what, you know, stroke survivors, things like that. So, but the attitude should be like what you did with your notebook. Oh, I noticed this is different. Oh, I noticed this is different. Oh, that tells you. So when parents come to me and say, is my child going to walk? Is my child going to talk? Or a musician, am I going to play again? I say, I don't know. If I had to know now, I wouldn't know what to do with you. But what I can tell you, we're going to look for change and change and more change and more change. And if it happens, we know what the outcome will be. So I call it a random process with predictable outcomes.
That is fantastic. And I know we're coming up on the end of our interview. I want to make sure that you get your next appointment on time. And this is one of the first times we've ever had a live studio audience here. So we have several people. Let's see, a couple of medical professionals. And
an Advanian Method practitioner.
Yeah, one of your practitioners.
And a parent that brings her child.
Yeah, and Alan here, yes. Who's actually been on camera the whole time learning. Alan, do you feel like you might have learned something that can give you a massive upgrade and make you stronger, bigger, faster, that kind of thing?
Yes.
Maybe more calm, more peaceful, kinder?
Yeah, I'm curious. What are you okay telling us what you think?
I'm not really sure yet.
That's perfect. That's a perfect answer because when you learn, you don't know yet. Uh-huh. First you know, so it's already inside you, and then you will learn. And if he has the experience like I had when I was 11 years old, I mean, he will know it.
So for people listening just on the radio, my son Alan, who's 7, has been sitting on my lap for almost this entire interview, just listening, just picking up some facts. And, well, and he has a new haircut too that I did. Oops.
I love it.
Yeah, you look great, Alan.
Yes, you do.
Now, where can people find your work? AnatBanielMethod.com, and that's AnatBaniel and method.com.
Yes.
And your two books. Tell people the titles so they can pick those up.
The one about working with children with special needs, which is relevant to all children, is Kids Beyond Limits. And the one for adults is Moving to Life, The 9 Essentials for Lifelong Vitality.
And when you download the show notes for this, all of those links will be in them. If you go to bulletproof.com, go check out the blog post for this, and we'll put all those in there as well, so you don't have to write all that down. No need to pull out your phone in traffic or anything like that. And the whole point there is that this process of sensing what's going on in your body is the key to both moving better, but also to thinking better. And anytime you do that, you'll actually improve your performance just because you have another data point. Without thinking about the data point at all, the brain will automatically build that into your subconscious model of the world. And Anant's work is really interesting, and she's one of the best in the world at looking at what movement does to the brain. So it's a unique privilege to get to have her here at Bulletproof Labs and to interview her live with a live audience even. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so very much. I mean, and I want the audience to know the feeling of being here is magnificent. Your space, your family.
Oh, thanks.
So you guys, I know you can't be here, but you can imagine just feeling love and expansion. So thank you so very much.
I appreciate that. Yes. Have a wonderful rest of your trip on Vancouver Island.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and absolutely.
For listeners, you know what to do. Check out Anant's work because you'll like it. And while you're at it, it's not too late, unless you're listening to this in the future at some point. If it's before April 4th of 2017, you can go to orderheadstrong.com and you can pick up a copy of Headstrong, which is my new book, and I'll give you a bunch of free stuff, including a coupon that just about pays for your book. So this is a unique opportunity. You get some free content, some videos of me teaching you breathing exercises, and stuff like that. So go to orderheadstrong.com, and I'd be grateful if you order it before it comes out, because when you do that, it helps my publishers know how many copies to print. So it makes a real difference to authors. Anant's an author too, and we work really hard, just thousands and thousands of hours, to make a book that saves you a lot of time, because you only have to read for a few hours and you get all this, like, the most valuable stuff. So I've done that work for you, and if you're going to buy a copy anyway, just buy it now. because it helps more. Like, say thanks. So,
thank you. Buy the book. It's the most ridiculously inexpensive thing on the market of books. So you put in a few years and a lifetime of work, and then it's what, $10, $15, nothing.
It's the most concentrated source of knowledge that's out there. So if you're going to do it anyway, your timing matters, and that matters a lot to authors like us. So thank you for considering purchasing both Anat's book and mine, because they'll help you. Yeah. Thanks again.
You. Hug.
Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.